RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Cassis does it again! It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over!
What's up? Welcome back to Playtesting. It is episode 197. This is the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Remember, hit that subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Odyssey app. Find us on YouTube. We're on the WEEI channel. Got the Playtesting playlist there. Has all of our episodes in video form. Hit the thumbs up there. Subscribe to WEEI. And we're on the socials, at Playtesting on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Sammy's here. Pat's here. Gordo talking to you. Sox just finished a series. I know we said we weren't going to go series by series this year, but that's just kind of how it's like. We do Mondays, Wednesdays, Fridays. And so far to this point, every Monday and Friday episode has been following a series. So we'll talk about it in series form. That series absolutely sucked. They got the last game. They didn't play well even in the win. We'll take the win because I think we can all agree this team is going to be better down the line. I was particularly frustrated after the third game just because the losses had stacked up, and my frustration wasn't because I was worried about where this team is going to be long term. It's just that I'm frustrated that they're playing bad right now. So when you can squeak out wins during bad times, that's valuable because there's going to be better times ahead. They're coming. The team's going to play better. The team's not going to strike out 20 bajillion times in a series, every single series. I think strikeouts might remain an issue, but maybe not to the level it was last year. We'll get into that in the episode. I was just happy they pulled out a win today. It didn't really matter to me how ugly it was. It was just important that they got out with a win and that we never have to see those freaking Harvard Law students in suits ever again in our lives. I'm done with that. I'm glad they're not going to be at Fenway Park anymore. And if they are, they probably won't be in suits. And they won't be on TV. So as long as we can get wins and not have to see those guys anymore, Gordo's good.
Wow. Gordo taking shots at the Harvard. What was that? Like their college prom? Something like that.
It was like law school formal or something. Like come on. We one time it was kind of interesting. Like, oh, look at them. They're all in suits. That was all we needed. That was it. That's all I needed.
Yeah. No, those guys smell like stale bagels. Not interested. No, that win on Sunday, the finale of the Blue Jays game series, that was big, I thought, because that was the difference between, you know, a good homestand where you go 4-3, swept the Cardinals, 1 out of 4 against the Blue Jays, and a bad homestand where you are under 500 and you lost 4 in a row at home. I think there's a big difference vibe-wise. We're a big vibes podcast. We talk about that a lot. But we go to the ballpark to gauge the vibes, to taste the air, and yeah, man, I'll take that that final win. And by the way, I mean Thursday, not Sunday, for that final game. So yeah, the big momentum shifter did it for me personally, at least, did a lot for my mood.
Yeah,
which is good. I mean, I feel like based on our group chat, that same for you guys.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Oh my god, like, dude,
there was some anger in there.
The firing people.
The group chat Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday was a dark place. And there's no such thing as a must win this early in the year. I will die on that hill. I do not care what anybody says. 12 games, 14 games of the year. There is no such thing. That being said, if they lose today, they're a game under. Even if they go in and sweep the White Sox, you leave there a game over, which isn't all that encouraging, like, you know, from a wider scope. But they did not need, and I'm not going to use the word need. It was a needed win, and it was a huge mood changer. It's some positive momentum going into Chicago for the weekend.
And also, dude, the amount of people I saw on Twitter after game three was especially bad. I'll give you that. But the amount of people on social media going, Thursday finale, that is a must win. I saw Loomer, he like quote tweeted someone and goes, must win or what? Like, I know it would be awful to get swept four games. We'd all be pissed right now. Rightfully so. It would be ugly, bad look, vibe killer. But come on, dude. We're like friggin', we're not even 20 games in. I don't want people, no must wins. No, not even close.
Let's be honest what this is. It's not a must win for the season. It's a must win for our sanity.
Yes, like, there you go.
Oh my God. I'm moving tomorrow. We're recording this podcast. I'm moving tomorrow. My apartment is a pigsty of boxes, and it's a mess right now. And throughout this process of packing, the Red Sox have been playing horribly. And like, for me, as someone who very much rides the wave, when they win, I'm thrilled. It's my day is made. I'm just a happier person when they win. And when they lose, like, shit out of luck for a couple hours there, I'm not going to be thrilled. Like, I'm just not going to be as happy as I would have been if they'd won. That's just the way I am. Being pissed when they lose makes when they win better. And that's just how I've always been. It's weird. I'm not like a super emotional person, but with baseball, with the Red Sox, I really am. And I don't know why that is. Someone needs to psychoanalyze, because I'm like a very like stoic, not stoic, but like generally positive person.
Stoic.
Stoic is the wrong word.
You look out windows for long periods of time pondering.
Like, I very much, like, bad things can happen to me outside of baseball. And, like, it's not that I don't care. It's just I don't try. It just doesn't impact me. But if the Red Sox
even
lose,
keel. You're very even keel.
That's the right way to put it. So when you mix them playing like shit with the, like, I can't even look 10 feet in front of me. It's gross. The win was important for my sanity. That's just the way it was. A must win for my sanity. Was it a must win in general? No. Would I have lived if they'd lost? Of course. But
wait, hold on.
But,
what was
and,
that?
You know, I didn't even call it a must win. But
you can't look 10 feet in front of you, you said?
Well, dude, there's boxes stacked over. I know you can't see it in the shot.
Okay.
It's bad. I'm excited.
I thought you were saying, like, I can't make eye contact with someone.
No,
else.
God, no. I'm not that crazy. I'm a psychopath, but not that much of a psychopath.
How long do you guys stay? Okay, this time of year, I'm talking April, March/April, early season. How long do you guys stay angry after a loss like Wednesday night, where they had the winning run on second with no outs, couldn't get them in.
Oh, bad loss.
And on third, like a bad, bad loss. How long do you stay mad for?
To the next day.
Really?
Dude, I was going to say until the lineup for the next day comes out.
Oh, wow. That's
I'm over it after 20 minutes. I'm pissed for like 20 minutes.
No,
and I'm like,
dude,
there's 199 of these.
Dude, last
I
night
how
I was.
Do you guys do that? I did that. I'm like,
yeah, it sucks. That's why we need them to win, Sammy.
I'm with Sammy. I'm very just, I've got enough like shit that stresses me and angers me out.
Yeah.
So the Sox are like literally on the lowest form.
But that said,
Joe, we're complete opposites. Joe just said the exact opposite of what I said. I said nothing gets to me except them. They get to me.
Everything gets to me except for the Sox.
If it were August, or maybe even like July or August, and they had a loss like the game three of that Toronto series, then I'm rip shit for like a whole day. But this early in the season, man, I can't. I struggle to get high or low with these guys, other That's than opening day. Opening day makes me nuts. I have to get a win on opening day.
No,
for some reason.
No.
Early in the season seems nope. bigger to me.
I stew. Dude, I stew, and I stew hard. Like, the first thing I do the morning after a loss is I pull up the record, like the standings, and I just stew. I'm like, if they fucking won last night, we're being second place. I just get so worked up over, like, not meaningless, because we've seen divisions come down to games.
Yep.
But games without current day impact, I get pretty worked up over. You can ask my girlfriend. She rides the wave.
Yeah, that's ask Marissa. She rides the wave with me too. But it's extra, like, after a loss. So Sammy, the first loss in the series, I was at the game and I tweeted this: never again, no more sub 40 degree games unless they're in October. That's the truth. Listen to me on that. Take my advice. I'm talking to all of you. Take my advice. It sucked. I went early for the bobblehead too, so I was there for a long time. When that game was over and they lost, that one I wasn't upset about at all. I was just happy that I could go home. And even if I was at home, they just won, what was it, five in a row? They won five in a row coming into that game. So like a loss after five wins in a row doesn't upset me at all. But when they start stacking them up, and when they lose in the fashion that they did, where it's infield defense, the left side of your infield isn't making throws, Bregman and Story, Campbell's making mistakes at second base too. It's the strikeouts, where it's not even just the guys, like you expect guys like Story and Sidon to strike out, but it's guys like even like Alex Bregman striking out in big spots. Mm-hmm. Like the guys,
abnormal. It's just unusual. Yeah. It's like an unusually bad loss. You know what I do a lot lately? Actually, the last 2 years, ever since we kind of, you know, got to, you know, meet Alex Cora, developed a sort of rapport with him and see how he operates up close. When the Red Sox have had a loss, no matter what time of the year it is, I often think, how is Cora reacting to this? And then the answer is normally, he's probably even keel worrying about the next game. And that's kind of how I try to be. I used to be pissed all until the next day. Like, no matter which game, any loss, any fashion, I would just be mad the rest of the day. It's such a hard way to live, though. I'm trying to think how the guys in the clubhouse would think. Like, that sucked. Wash it away. Move on. And we'll get to the documentary. There's a big part where Casas talks about that exact concept, about how when he cleans his cleats off from that game, that is symbolic to him. That's him wiping away that game, good or bad, and moving on to the next. And, like, I feel like so many fans torture themselves. Not that this is a serious topic that people need therapy about, but so many people angry, just pissed off because they lost a game in April. I'm like, relax, dude.
I think there's a difference here. First off, guys like Cora and Casas, they have to do that. They have to, because it's going to impact their performance the next day. Meanwhile, me, I can be pissed off to the break of dawn. It doesn't fucking matter. Like, they're going to play the same tomorrow, whether I'm pissed off or happy. What was I going to say? The point B was more important.
It affects the people around you. Doesn't it affect, dude, like, how you're feeling and the people around you as well? Like, I'm thinking about for myself. For myself, I try not to get too mad, because it ruins my day. Like, if I'm able to move on, I can salvage this day.
Well, usually the games happen at the end of the day, so it's not really set. Like, they end at 10. It's like, okay, how many hours are you going to be up after that? Fair. It's afternoon. You try to salvage it.
If someone brings up the Red Sox to me the day after a loss and they have not played yet, I legitimately get mad. I'm telling you right now, like, yesterday, 2 days ago, Patriot was like, oh man, the Sox. And I'm like, yep, not a win. And it's just like
screaming at them. You can't strike out the guy on
third base. You and your dumb leg. Fix your own leg.
But, like, or even, like, if, like, I'm talking to my dad and he's like, what happened to the bats? And I'm like, shut the fuck up. Like, I get so mad for no reason. I understand how stupid it is, but I just can't not do it.
Here's what I try to, because I know that I can't, and I don't want to change myself, because I'm a very even keel guy. And it actually, even when the emotions aren't good, it's almost refreshing to, like, feel them, because I don't let myself feel them at a lot of other points during the day. So, like, when the Red Sox make me mad, it's like I didn't get mad or upset today or yesterday or the day before. And when I get really, really happy, it's the same thing. It's like I don't let myself get too high, but with them, I do. The one thing, though, is that I try to let my takes stay even keel. Like, my emotions can go all over the place, but I don't want, like, I'm not going to go out there and be like, they struck out 14 times today, scored one run, fire Pete Fatsy. That take is the most overused, nonsensical, lazy. Obviously you don't know what the fuck you're talking about take, because if the hitters are struggling, well, obviously it's the hitting coach's problem. Ugh. Like, give me a break with
that. That's fire the infield coach. You think they should fire the infield coach? Who is it? Hudson? Kyle Hudson?
No, it's
fire him
Flo.
After he's outfield.
It's Flo. It's,
yeah,
oh, Flo.
Yeah. But Sammy, fire. Don't give that take because they've done that 2 years in a row now.
That's true. That's true.
Fair. Careful fair. Now. It's not for your point. They've done that.
It's just funny. Like I feel like you only see it with Fatsy. You only see like fire him because it's baseball. You're gonna fail offensively way more than you're gonna succeed. I think that's the first thing they teach you when you start playing. So
especially as hitters,
it's just so lazy. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. When you're on offense, you're
losing. You used to see that with Dave Bush was the king of that before Pete.
Oh
Fatsy was.
Yeah.
But now Andrew Bailey, and like Andrew Bailey, deservedly so, he's done a terrific job. But let's be real here. The pitchers could struggle like crazy for a month straight, and no one would be saying fire Andrew Bailey. Which good for Andrew Bailey for building up that opinion of him. People love him, and again, he's doing a great job. But the pitchers could do terribly, and he would be safe. Whereas Fatsy, the hitters could go off for months, and then the hitters get the credit. But if they are bad, then it's all on Pete Fatsy on the eyes of the fans.
Never forget. Never, ever forget. Sorry for interrupting you. I'll never forget there was a game last year, 2024 team, where Dom Smith, who we love, friend of the program, he was hitting third because there were so many injuries. Red Sox scored like two runs all game and they lost low scoring game. And everyone was saying, fire Pete Fatsy. Like, dude, you got Dom Smith hitting third for you. I don't want to hear a fucking thing about the hitting coach. Like, why are you the
if it's not that? Even blame, if it's not that.
Blame the team. The guys on the field.
Like, tell me, Sammy, if Rafael Devers, Alex Bregman, and Jaron Duran, and Tristan Casas, and Trevor Story all go 0 for 5, is that on Pete Fatsy? Is there something that Pete Fatsy didn't teach the all-class, like the top of the top in the league, all-star, Casas hasn't. All four of the five of them have been all-stars, and somehow if they go 0 for 5, it's on Pete Fatsy?
He's that powerful. He has that much influence over them. He's like, swing at the first pitch and then take the next four. And they're like, okay, we'll do that.
Can you imagine, too, like Pete Fatsy just taking like Alex Bregman aside? He's like, dude, you try and put the bat on the ball.
Let me teach you something.
And Bregman goes, dude, that's why I chose Boston. Thank you, Pete. And like walks over like, dude, it's not that serious.
You know what's funny? For one more quick thing. Sorry. A friend of the program, Jake O'Donnell, had a really good tweet on Thursday about this topic, about how people always talk about the hitting coach. And then we haven't spoken about this. Their follow-up is often something like, yeah, you really got to shorten up with two strikes. Like, dude, that's what you learn in high school. You think these guys don't know that? You think they don't know they have to change their approach? They know that. They're either doing it and failing, or they're, you know, not following instructions, which happens. It's just crazy to me.
And if I were listening to this podcast as someone who has spent the last 3 or 4 days clamoring for the team to fire Pete Fatsy, what I would be saying is, okay, when can I point the finger at him? And my answer to that would be, if you have a roster full of guys that A, are productive hitters and they're underperforming, but B, you've got a pattern and like a reason why they're not hitting. Like, for instance, let's apply it to the Red Sox. If the Red Sox, a team that maybe should be a little bit below average in terms of striking out, continue to strike out the most in baseball, not in April, but also in May, June, July, like if it continues through the year and they don't fix it, then you can point the finger a little bit. But we're in April, and let's get into the weather discussion. I don't think the weather is an excuse, but when it's sub 30 degree weather, kind of a weird time to be pointing the finger at the hitting coach. Just even though I refuse to let the weather be an excuse for these guys. Like, it's not like the Blue Jays are playing in 70 degrees. The Red Sox are playing in 25. Like, it's the same weather, and the Blue Jays were able to make it work and win three straight games. But that's not, I don't know. Don't point the finger at Pete Fatsy. They'll be okay.
So, okay, on the topic of weather, I think we have to define what we mean by excuse. I think it's pretty abundantly clear that the weather impacted both teams. And the Blue Jays weren't exactly crushing the ball either. They handled the cold better. Credit to them for doing that. Cold and rain and wind, by the way, three different things. But that was abnormally cold. That was like, I don't know if you guys remember when you would have like Little League or Babe Ruth tryouts here in New England, and it would be February, and it would be that temperature, like 30s, and then with a wind chill into the teens, and you had to take batting practice outside. You put bat to ball, and it is hell. It hurts so friggin' bad. It's so hard to get any bat speed going. It's hard to move. Your joints are tight. You're not moving like you normally do. So I think it's an excuse for both sides to have, you know, not much offense, which is exactly what we saw, even into the fourth game of the series, which wasn't as cold, but still cold. I think it's a perfectly fine excuse for that. It's not an excuse for losing the games, though. Like, the Red Sox had multiple opportunities in the second and third game to win those games, and they failed. You know, first game they got outplayed, whatever. But the middle two games, they had ample opportunities to run away with that game, and they didn't come through. So no excuse for losing, but I think the cold weather is a very fair excuse for both teams not putting together much offense.
Yeah, I think the weather's a factor. I don't see it as an excuse, because guess what? The other team's playing in the same exact weather. So like that, I think the weather plays more into the pitching side of things than it does offensively. We saw Crochet. He couldn't get a grip on that ball for the life of him. He still pitched great, but he was like erratic. And then who pitched Lucas? No. Against Crochet.
Easton Lucas?
Oh, God.
Easton Lucas.
Never want to hear that name again in my life.
Easton Lucas. Yeah.
That's his name? Yeah.
NPC.
Yeah. And then, like, Crochet couldn't get a grip. Dude, Easton Lucas, he could get a grip. He was dealing. And it's the same weather. Both pitchers are pitching in it. Hitters are hitting in the same weather. It's not an excuse. It's a factor. And one thing really quick that is completely and utterly fucking ridiculous that I've been seeing. But it's cold in October. Do you realize that cold in October is, like, low 50s, high 40s?
Pat, I got the numbers right here because I thought that would come up. I was going to say it.
I'm going to bring it up.
It's about 64 to 52 range, generally in Boston, Massachusetts in October. It was like 20 degrees colder than that.
Dude,
in most of these games.
28 with like negative 12 wind chill. Like, get the shut up. But it's cold in October.
No. Yes, it's chilly in October.
You have to be able to win games in all conditions, particularly the conditions that you're going to see.
That's not the argument. That's not the argument we're having. We're saying that it's not this shockingly cold in October.
But it has been before, and it can be. We've seen snowstorms in October.
Gordo, this is what I just want you to envision, right? You are in you're in heaven. You're in Florida.
Yeah.
It's, you know, high 70s, low 80s.
Hell yeah. Let's go. Day. I love it.
You come up to Boston, it's much colder, you know, 50s. All of a sudden, boom, 28, windy. It should be snowing. October, you play, you know, the dog days of summer. It's blistering hot. You get to September, it's kind of coming mid-80s, high 70s. October rolls in, it's 60s, 50s. You're gradually kind of easing into that.
Yes, that is a legitimate point.
28 out of nowhere.
Yes, I get it. Not out of nowhere. Not out of nowhere. It's been 40s like every day. Not out of nowhere. And I'm not saying that it's not a factor. Pat, you made the point before. It's a factor. It's not an excuse.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
The truth is, like, yeah, did the weather play a role in Trevor Story and Alex Bregman not being able to make throws to first base in this series? Of course it did. But let's be real here. You're in a major league game. Those need to be outs. Like, I don't care. Like, I understand the weather, and if you had a conversation with them, they would tell you, yeah, the weather's a factor. I got to make the throw, though.
Yeah,
and that's true.
I agree. Yeah, the weather is a factor. You have more, you know, I don't want to use the word excuse. It's more understandable when you see mistakes like that in weather like that, because these guys, I mean, look at Christian Campbell. Christian Campbell's the best example. That dude has been nails all year long. Then this freakish cold front comes in, and he looked so uncomfortable. He's like bobbling the ball. He's not making any sort of contact. When he is, he's barely getting the ball. Everyone's bat speed looks slow, both sides. People were like freaking out about the offense. Like, this team can't do anything. Meanwhile, Toronto's not doing anything either. These guys can barely friggin' move. And normally, in October, I wouldn't be giving this excuse because it's, you know, it's chilly, But this was absurdly, abnormally cold. Like, what was it, 18 degrees with wind chill in game three of the series or two? That's just nuts, man.
Third coldest first pitch in Fenway history. That's not October baseball. That's not typical October baseball.
The other once in a while, in October.
Not typical. It's not. It's like that game. Typical, but if you're going to get that cold, if you're going to get that cold of a game, and it's either going to come in April or it's going to come in October. Maybe it'll come
probably going to come in April. But
probably 2008 can come in October.
You guys remember the 2008 World Series in Philly? Philly versus Tampa? And it was like torrential downpours, but for some reason they didn't call the game, and both teams were just disgusting, making awful plays. Teams weren't like, it just was the ugliest World Series you'll ever see. And everyone was like, well, it's because of the weather. It rains all year long. I mean, this is not the same concept. Like, it's still an excuse. They both look, both those teams look terrible.
I hate that word, excuse.
But like my
job is to win the game.
Yeah, but that's just an oversimplification. Of course it is, but that's an oversimplification. You can't just say, well, you don't get this excuse because you're supposed to win. What does that mean? I mean, I think it's more
winning
than fair,
ball players on the club, they're not kids. Like,
why does that matter? That doesn't mean, dude, being a winning ball player doesn't mean the cold magically doesn't affect you.
I'm not saying the cold shouldn't affect them. I'm just saying that it's not an excuse to strike out 14 times in a game and score one run or zero runs in a 15 inning stretch. Like, it's not an excuse.
I think it's totally a fair excuse to have bad offense. Maybe not to that degree. That's pretty egregious.
You can be worse than usual, but you can't be. You cannot throw in the towel. And I'm not saying they threw in the towel, but by not scoring in 15 innings, like you can't win games like that. I guess they won the second one like that, but or the
that's fair. I'm saying it's not an excuse for losing the games. Again, not an excuse for losing, but I think the performances we saw were greatly impacted by the weather.
Yeah,
My analogy is between crochets, erratic control, the infield errors, and the bats just not hitting. To me, it is the equivalent of when it is pissing rain in like November in the NFL season. To me, it's the equivalent of being like, what the fuck do you mean Tom Brady threw a pick and Ben Jarvis Green Ellis fumbled? Well, it's raining. It's going to be hard.
Well, this is a great example, Pat, because guess who continued to always win in the elements? Tom Brady. He never.
I get it.
And they'd use it to their advantage. The Red Sox play in Boston.
It's completely
the Blue Jays
different
play in a dome.
Completely like, different.
It's a different game, but I'm just saying, like, yes, the weather impacts how football is played. It does not give you an excuse to lose games. It just means you have to win games differently. It's different in baseball. I get it. It's not like you change the strategy. Like in football, when it's raining and snowing, you run the ball. In baseball, it's not like what you just roll. Like there's no equivalent to that. But I'm just saying, like as a cold weather team that has been playing in the cold, like it's not an excuse to just not put up any runs and to make countless errors in the field when you hadn't been making errors to start the season.
Right. I think the way we should put it is it's not a get out of jail free card. Like if we could see they were being impacted by it. It's harder to play in this weather. So I get it, but it's not a free pass is a good way. Like you got to have some, you can't just ignore it and you can't just let it go. So I think it would be, you know, in between. Also, I'm reading a study done by the American Meteorological Society that tracks how games in 30 degree or lower weather are impacted, and they score two runs less on average. So,
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor, ditch the subscription.
Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Fun fact, you can't get pregnant every day. You're only fertile for 6 days, ovulation day and the 5 days leading up to it. Natural Cycles is the only birth control app that can pinpoint your fertile window by analyzing your hormone-driven temperature trends. It's more than just a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Take that for what it's worth.
Well, this is a good segue into my next question for you guys, because if obviously, yes, this was a bad series. They won the final game. Happy about that. But the series as a whole, not good. But one thing that happened that was really good, more so two things. Great starts from Tanner Houck and Walker Buehler. Houck, was it six? I'm just running off the top of my head.
Six and two thirds.
Six and two thirds, one run. And Buehler was six and a third, one run.
Yes.
Yeah. So really good starts out of them. Both of them had not, I didn't think either of them had looked quite as bad as their ERAs. More so Buehler, I didn't think looked as bad. Like, he had an 8.5 ERA coming into this. I didn't think he looked like an 8.5 ERA pitcher coming into this. But still, like, you needed to see good starts out of them, and you definitely got it. But my question, you know, Sam, you just brought up the stat, two runs fewer in cold weather games. If we're giving the Red Sox not a mulligan or a get out of jail free card, but if we're giving them this, you know, the weather impacted them, do we then have to take that away from Tanner Houck and Walker Buehler because, you know, the weather impacted the Jays hitters? Like that?
No, I think you consider it. I think you consider it. Like, I don't know if they would have been as dominant in, you know, regular weather. That said, they did their job. Houck stayed low in the zone, induced a ton of ground balls. That's great. Walker Buehler mixed and matched really well. That's great. So it's like with Easton Lucas. Like, if that game's in the middle of the summer, I don't think Easton Lucas dominates that Red Sox lineup. I think that the way he pitches was sadly very perfect for this weather. He's just throws it over the plate. But to answer your question, Gordo, yeah, I do think you have to factor it in. I don't want to take anything away from them, but you do have to acknowledge that they were, you know, they had some advantageous weather and they worked with it well, which is, you know, credit to them for that. Just like I'm giving the Blue Jays credit for handling the weather better than the Red Sox. It's part of the game. So, yeah, I think they both did well with the acknowledgement that, you know, especially Houck. Houck's game was freezing.
Buehler's How many did Houck walk? Do we know? I'm going to pull it up just so we can have it. Because Buehler only walked one. Houck only walked two. As we saw in the first game, Crochet just couldn't get a feel for the strike zone. You know, if you're like, you saw it with the infielders, it was harder to make throws for them too. So, like, yes, it's hard to hit and harder to hit in the weather. It's also harder to throw, particularly with accuracy in the weather. So I give them credit. It's hard to, like, it's why I basically leave the weather as like a nothing, because anything I take away from one side, I take it away from the other too.
I think you just have to use nuance with it. Like, I think, like, the way I looked at the first game, Garrett Crochet, obviously a much better pitcher than Easton Lucas. Everyone agrees. The way Crochet goes after guys, it wasn't working for him. He was able to adjust from the Texas game to the Baltimore game. He did not adjust in this third outing with the Red Sox. He could have gone to a more, you know, hit the ball, contact-oriented style of pitching. And it seemed like he kept trying to blow guys away because that's who he is. I get it. Whereas Easton Lucas was just like, here you go, right down the middle, bottom of the zone. Here you go, hit it, ground ball, ground ball, ground ball, pop up, ground ball, ground ball. So I think being able to recognize the scenario you're in the conditions you're pitching in and then adapt to it. I think that's a skill. I think Crochet did an okay job. I think Easton Lucas, Tanner Houck, and even Buehler, even though it wasn't as cold, I think they all did a great job with that.
The Blue Jays, the Red Sox struck out a ton in the, I actually don't know the number of the fourth game, but the middle two games in particular, tons of strikeouts. So like,
yeah, insane.
I don't know. Cause like, I don't want Crochet to change who he is. I want him to be malleable to where his stuff is at on a given day. And maybe it's like, okay, you can, and you see guys do it in 3-0 counts. They'll take a couple miles an hour off their fastball to make sure they get it over the plate. Joe says 10 strikeouts in the final. Okay, so they,
that's a good way to put it, Gordo. Malleable to the situation. Like Chapman was able to blow guys away with heat in the cold. He was able, it was working for him. So he didn't need to adjust. Crochet, you could tell from the first inning, nasty, like always, but it wasn't himself. It's not, you know that's not the usual Garrett Crochet. So in that situation, I'd be like, okay, it's not working. Got to adapt. And it's funny, I'm saying it's not working as if he got hit or anything.
But you know what,
he
Sammy? It was a bookend start for him, though, because he had a tough first inning, got through it, and then he was good the rest of the way. And then the last inning was where it all fell apart. And you could make the argument, and I probably would make the argument, that he stayed in maybe one batter too long in that game. Not like it didn't add earned runs to his ledger, but it definitely took the game. Like, I don't know. You walked one more guy than probably I would have allowed him to. But that last inning, it all fell apart. The middle innings, it kind of felt like he did adjust a little bit. But then he had nothing in terms of command in that last inning.
How many strikeouts did he have?
Six.
Five and two thirds.
Yeah.
So a little below his normal. Actually, that's kind of a lot below. His normal rate is like 13 for 9. So that's pretty well below. That's good for a normal human, but Garrett Crochet's not a normal human. But yeah, I guess you could say he adjusted a little bit in the middle, but it didn't look like that guy we saw in Baltimore where he was just commanding the zone in the zone where he wanted to throw it.
How many White Sox is he about to strike out on Sunday?
Dude, what's the weather in Chicago? First and foremost, what is the weather in Chicago on Sunday?
I'll find it right now.
Because if it's over 50 degrees, I'm setting that line at 12 and a half.
All right, 50 Sunday
on the dot.
Oh, no, he's pitching Sunday. I've got 60. Oh,
56 and rainy.
Dude, at least.
Are you looking at Chicago, Sammy?
Yeah, Chicago, Illinois.
I've got 60 and cloudy.
All right, either way,
pretty close.
I'm hearing 56 and I'm hearing 60. I'm saying 11. I think 11 is like a lock.
If he gets rained out or if he gets rain delayed and he goes like two innings, ultimate letdown. That happened the one time I got to watch Shohei Ohtani pitch. It was on Patriots Day a couple years ago at Fenway, and they got through like two innings. And he pitched two innings and then it rained and that was that.
Yeah, I think Garrett Crochet is going to be able to beat the Chicago White Sox. That's my hot take of the day.
It's a hot take. We're running on time, so I got to make sure that we talk about the Connor Wong injury. Happened in the first or second? Fitz was the second game, right?
Yeah.
Or first game.
Fitz was first, then Fitz it was first Crochet.
Game. First second. Game, yeah, first.
Fitz was the first game, so yeah, it happened on the George Springer backswing, like fractured pinky. Obviously, that sounds bad. Cora seemed to think a day later that it was like best case scenario. They wouldn't give a timetable, but Blake Sable or Blake Sobel, if you ask Dave O'Brien, is up now. He's not very good. He can't really throw the ball. The at-bats have not looked very good. They just signed Yasmani Grandal. I don't think he's going to be up anytime soon, but clearly they're adding depth to the organization for catchers. I don't know about you guys. Like, I love Carlos Narvaez, not enough to call him the Narv, but I love Carlos Narvaez, but this team is definitely better off having both him and Wong than him and Blake Sable.
Dude.
Sobel.
I don't know who ran, but there was a runner on Blake Sable
today. Dude, it was Heinemann. It was Tyler Heinemann.
Dude, a catcher. He threw a muffin down to second base.
It was Tyler Heinemann.
It was so slow that I thought my TV was lagging. It was insane, dude. I could not believe how soft that came out of his hand.
I know that his baseball savant from last year did not have him as a good defender. I don't think I remember the arm looking like that.
In AAA, what were runners on him? 7 for 7? Is that what it was?
14 for 14, Pat.
Oh, so double. Okay.
Cool. Double that.
So yeah, like let's get Connor Wong back. I know that he's been probably the biggest punching bag for Red Sox fans, and I'm not saying he didn't deserve it. He hadn't played well offensively. His defense definitely looked improved, but let's get that guy back. Like, okay, we learned our lesson. Like, we need two major league catchers on the team. That's the truth.
Well, you heard in Crochet's second start, the one that was against the Orioles, Dave O'Brien was talking about with Lou how Wong and Crochet, prior to that start, they had this long dialogue. They were talking about what went wrong in the game against Texas, and then all the things they wanted to change. So him not being there, it's not just the on-field production, if you want to call it that, but the cohesion of the pitching staff. I think people often don't realize the role catchers play. I think we've interviewed one catcher ever, and it was Danny Jansen right when he got to the Red Sox, because the catchers are always doing stuff with the pitching staff. It's like a full-time job when they're not playing the game. So, I think that's a bigger loss than people realize. I wanted Narvaez to take over as the starting catcher eventually, but not like this.
Okay, so I'm going to show you guys something here. So keep in mind, AAA runners are 14 for 14 off Sable this year, and we saw the throw today. What percentile do you think his pop time would be in from last year? And keep in mind, I don't have the actual number because he didn't qualify. But I'm going to try to show you where the bar is.
Like average pop time? Like
MLB
average?
Average is like 1.8, 1.9. I'm going to go with like 1.98.
So you think it's above average?
I think
a lower pop time.
Oh, you're right. Okay, sorry. Yeah, I'm being stupid.
I think his pop time's average. His arm is a noodle, but he gets up there fine.
Well, pop time is your arm.
Pop time is pop of the mitt to pop of the mitt.
Oh, so I thought they included arm. Oh, okay.
When the ball hits the catcher's mitt to when to the ball hits the second baseman and shortstop's mitt.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So probably just below, a little below average.
Last year, above. I'm going to show you this. Right. Yeah, it's not coming through.
No. Yeah, a little below average.
No, it's above average. It's not showing. It looks like it's maybe like 65 to 70th percentile, which if you watch the games, I'm looking at his 2024 Savant page, which he didn't qualify.
Oh, yeah. That's the 60th percentile, roughly. Looks like 60.
Yeah.
I was probably pretty close with like.
So where's that?
Two.
I don't get it.
Maybe it's the weather.
Whatever. Sammy, I'm gonna reach through the damn screen. I will.
Oh, his pop time in 2023 was 18th percentile.
Ooh. And he qualified?
So that's pretty ass.
Yeah, he qualified.
Okay. Yeah, it's true. I didn't look up. Yeah, I thought he played a little bit last year. I don't know the game.
Did they even have arm strength? Because they used to have, didn't they used to have pop time? Oh, yeah. They have arm strength. Okay, his pop time was terrible. His arm strength was a little above average in 2023.
No way, dude.
Maybe it means there's hope. Maybe there's hope. Maybe it's the cold. He's been actually, San Francisco's actually weirdly cold. So it's
Francisco feels like October. This was not that. This was not that, man. This was none of us went to that. Which game was it? The Tuesday game. That was the really bad one. The Crochet start. That was the third coldest. Fuck. I wish we went. We should have gone. Bad journalism by us.
No, I went to the Monday game. I'll tell you, there was one good thing to come out of that game. It was getting the Jaren Duran All-Star bobblehead, which I still haven't taken out of the box, but I anticipate it being a very good one. I like when the bobbleheads have like it's not just the guy playing. It's like there's something else to it. I like that. And then the only other memorable thing that happened that game that they probably didn't show it on TV when they were playing. Oh, Pat's got it. How the hell did you get it, Pat? You'd have to sit in the damn cold.
Nope, my brother did.
Oh, yeah. Freaking mooching off your poor brother who probably froze
glass
his toes
bat
off.
Removable.
Does it slot in and like rest on the other arm?
Yep.
All right, that's pretty cool.
And then back 2024 All-Star Game MVP.
Hell yeah! Shout out Jaren. But yeah, during Sweet Caroline in the Fitz game, I looked over at Vlad, and Vlad was freaking dancing to Sweet Caroline. And it had me thinking about, man, what could have been that guy. He wanted to be here, man. He wanted to be here. And we saw him when we were there on Wednesday?
Oh my God.
We were there on Wednesday I was just like,
Dude, that batting practice was insane. I've never seen a guy hit that many balls over the monster that easily.
And when you say over the monster, you mean way over the monster.
Over it. Not into the monster, like pretty far over. Not like, oh, it got over. Like that is way over the monster.
We were on the Blue Jays baseline when Vlad was going out to BP. I thought Gordo was going to take a bite out of him. He was looking at him like a snack, dude.
Do you like Guerrero?
Eyed, pretty much drooling, and he walks by, and Gordo goes, and just smirks. And then, wait. I was going to save this right off said, but we're talking about the game. So going back to the Cardinals series, that Saturday game, I had the idea because we were talking about what game do we want to go to. All right, we'll go to the Wednesday one. Cool, sounds good. I said we should get Bo Bichette to do the intro for our Who Says No and not tell Joe. Mission accomplished. Bo could not have been cooler. We walked up and we go, hey, Bo, we do a segment on our show called Who Says No? It's Mock Trades. You mind doing the intro? We were mortified that he was going to ask why him, simply because we would then have to say, oh, our producer came up with a trade that was such a huge overpay for you that we would never pay in a million years, that people wanted him fired. So he didn't. We asked the question, and he literally just goes, yeah, sure, cool. And just we gave him the script. He read it, shook our hands, and off he went.
I want to ask Joe, because we didn't tell you, Joe. We just kind of posted it. And I'm sure that you found out with a tweet notification, I assume, right?
Yeah.
Was it like that one of us retweeted or something?
I think it was because I also run the Sox booth. Twitter, and of course I have links to you guys. Like I have mine, I have the Sox booth, I have the Plague Tessie account and all that. So all I saw was like a little tiny screenshot, and I couldn't tell exactly who it was, and the description that said like everyone's favorite segment has a new intro. And so I kind of had a feeling, because I remember on Saturday when we were all there that it was talked about between the four of us, we should do something with Bo Bichette, but we didn't specify exactly what it was. So when I saw the video of him saying, this is Bo Bichette, you're listening to Who Says No on Play Tessie, I'm like, my job is done.
Joey, what was the first emotion? Was it like, oh, or was it, oh, or was it?
Yeah, give us the sound. Oh. Give us the sound. Yeah. I love the sound check.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Okay. So that's excited. I like that. That's good. I like it. Yeah. I don't know. We're going to have to figure out how we have to make something with it. I don't know. We might have to like send it to the production crew at odd, 'cause they made our intro. They might be able to make us something with that. I don't know. It could be funny. We've got some time. Trade season doesn't come for a couple more months. So we'll hope maybe we'll get something cooked up, but thanks to Bo Bichette for doing that.
RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
Here at Blue Apron, we know exactly how hectic school nights can be. That's why we created Assemble and Bake, delicious one-pan meals that make family dinner simple. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients and put the pan in the oven to bake. Then you're free to help out with that last-minute diorama. Shop Assemble and Bake at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, do we want to get into some Nuff Said before we get out of here? Do we want to do our, like, we have a group Nuff Said that we're going to, did anyone have anything else for Nuff Said before our group Nuff Said?
No, mine was just the bow thing.
Okay.
I had something, but I can't think of it, so I'll just forget it.
All right. Well, okay, we got to talk about the Netflix thing, because this is the first time that we've actually jumped on for a real episode since that dropped. And, you know, first off, obviously, shout out to them for putting us in it. You got the Tristan Casas question, the island question in the first episode. And then you had me like saying that they lost 3 out of 4. And Sammy, what did you say that like there's like,
I was like,
there's no words to describe how pathetic it was?
I sounded like such a dork. I was like, pathetic is not a strong enough word.
Yeah.
God, I wish I could punch myself in the face for saying.
And like the players are like, it's like Trevor Story and Tristan Casas, and when you say it, like, they show Emmanuel Valdez, which is poetic as fuck. But like, they're right, just sitting there, like, depressed, and like, it's just Sammy just ripping them.
Dude, it's not just me. It's like a lot of media people, and then
picked you.
They threw me in there.
They gave me a good edit, because trust me, I'm sure that I said that shit too. But for me, they were just like, I just said, Red Sox lose 3 out of 4 to the Yankees, and if you look at the playoff odds, they're probably not making the playoffs. That's what they had me say. It's like, okay, I'm scot-free. Yeah.
And then I am, oh God, how did they find that though? How the heck did Netflix, like,
it's from the podcast. They were probably just trying to, I don't know. I assume that the way they find audio for the stories they want to tell is they find a specific date, and then they look up podcasts from that date. I know they have a bunch of Section 10 stuff in there. I'm sure they did a bunch with them.
I can guarantee you they have an army of underpaid interns who they make comb through podcasts like ours and Section 10 and all the other Red Sox podcasts to find quotes like that. And some intern probably goes, oh, boss, I found this absolute dickhead on this show called
Sammy James.
His name is Sammy James, which sounds like a stripper, and he's going off on the Red Sox. He called them pathetic, even worse. And so now I'm a bad guy.
Yeah, you're the bad guy. You can't really show your face around Fenway Park anymore. Banned for life.
Banned for life.
But no, the real group Nuff Said is we just got to talk about the Jaren Duran stuff. Obviously, there was I think it happens in episode 4 where Jaren, to be frank here, I haven't been able to watch any of the doc yet, so I'm excited to see it. But we know what happens in episode 4 because it's been very covered by the media. He goes into pretty deep detail about a suicide attempt that I believe happened in 2022, where, I mean, you could see it on the field in real time. I mean, obviously he was having a tough go of it, and with the way he was reacting to things on the field, it's not a surprise to me that he was going through stuff off the field. Could never have imagined that it got to that extent. But really all that I want to say about it is that I think it's honorable that he trusted them to tell this story or to help him tell the story. I think him coming out is going to help a lot of people. I know Samaritans, I think that's what they're Samaritans. Do I have that right? Yep. Samaritans. Yep. They got like three times the calls and texts that they typically get the day that news came out. Because when a guy like Jaren Duran, a guy who, you know, you look at him on the surface, he's a good looking guy, freakish athlete, highly paid professional athlete who gets to play for the Boston Red Sox and play baseball every day for a living. Like on the surface, you know, you look at him, he's got the perfect life. But the truth is, you know, stuff like that, it doesn't matter what's going on the outside. It's a demon on the inside for him. And a guy like him telling that story tells people who are also having those problems that, hey, you're not the only one. You're not alone. And that guy asked for help. And that guy told his story and came out and did that. And that means you can do it too. And I think that was honorable of him. Alex Cora said he should win the Roberto Clemente Award for it. And I can't say that I disagree. So props to Jaren Duran for doing that. I can't imagine how hard it was to do that and do it on camera.
Yeah, agree with everything you said, Gordo. And, you know, trigger warning for anyone who is sensitive to the subject, because I'm gonna mention, also spoiler alert if you haven't heard the news about Duran's story in episode 4 here. But yeah, just want to give a trigger warning out because I'm going to mention what he tries to do. So if you're sensitive to that, I would skip ahead. The detail Duran got into, not only of how he was feeling, but what he was doing, literally had a gun to his head. He was on the verge of not being here anymore. So for him to, one, be comfortable enough to talk, but two, get into that level of detail, I can't imagine ruminating out loud to not strangers, but it's not like the media are his buddies. The Netflix guys aren't his buddies. These are people he knows through work. And he's talking to them about the lowest point of his life. I can't imagine doing that. That has to be, you know, has to be extremely uncomfortable, probably not fun at all to talk about it, but he knew he was making an impact, a positive impact. And you talk about the Samaritans seeing such an uptick in calls, and, you know, a lot of people would obviously say that that's bad. That's people not feeling well. Those people are out there regardless. The fact that they're reaching out to help for help is a testament to what Duran has done. And I mean, he's a guy to admire, a credit for everything he said. Again, I can't imagine going through that and then reliving it in front of all these people. So, whatever his baseball impact is, I think it's safe to say that this will likely be bigger when it's all said and done.
Yeah. I think the other thing too that shouldn't go unmentioned is his parents didn't know about this until he kind of told Netflix, which even shows the gravity of it. He couldn't even have that conversation with his own parents, but he knew that if he had said something to Netflix that was going to be so widely produced and pumped and published and all this, it was going to carry a long ways, and to kind of get out of his comfort zone and kind of have that conversation for the first time with good intention. Like, it wasn't just, oh, here's my story. It was more advocating for people feeling like that. And I mean, obviously eventually he has that conversation with his parents and stuff, but it was something that he obviously kept pretty under wraps for a couple of years now. And he capitalized on Netflix in a good way. He shared his story for something that I feel like a lot of people know someone who goes through those things, or they go through them themselves. And the director, I think it was yesterday, the director was up in the booth with Will and OB, and he kind of had an umbrella thing for it. And he said, a guy like Jaren Duran, who's young, good looking, professional baseball player, like all this stuff, like he's going through it. If he can go through it, literally anybody can. And I think him speaking out about it was, yes, Greg Whiteley. Thank you, Joe. It he did something incredible. And I think he should be, and he is being properly commended for it.
Yeah. No, I mean, incredibly difficult, as you said, Pat. Like, if you can't even have that conversation, if it's too hard to even have that conversation with your own parents, like, it must have felt impossible to do that with the Netflix people. And I know that Netflix people, like, did their best to make sure the players were comfortable with them, but let's be real here. Like, if it's too hard to tell it to your parents, like, yeah. I don't care how close you get to the Netflix people, it's not going to be easy. But he knew the type of impact that it could have if he did it, and it was purposeful what he did. And so that's honorable. That's honorable in my eyes, and, you know, everyone who's talked about it. So, I mean, just, I'm appreciative that he did it. I don't look at him any differently. Like, I hope he continues to get the help he needs, and anyone else who has those issues, you know, I wish the same to you. Go check out the statement, the Red Sox posted statements from Jaron Duran and his parents. And if you have issues like that, there's contact information in there for where you can get help for that. Just like Jaron did, and hopefully continues to do. But yeah, just obviously a huge shout out to Jaron, and we weren't going to go this podcast without talking about that, because obviously, you know, that might have been the most important thing, probably what it was the most important thing to come out of, you know, this few day period since we recorded, out of the Netflix documentary, out of everything related to the Red Sox recently. That's the most important thing, and I'm glad that he did it. So anything else before we wrap here, guys? Sammy, you remember what she had?
No, but also, I hope people, you know, you're at Fenway, it's all good to chirp the players, it's part of the experience, but some of the stuff that Bayo is talking about, hearing people say, stuff that Duran was hearing people say, like, yo, relax, people. At the end of the day, it's baseball. So I hope this documentary kind of continues to humanize these athletes. We often look at them, and I think Greg Whiteley said this in the booth as well. We look at them like they're, like, not humans. They're superheroes. They're above humans. But at the end of the day, they're humans too. So
yep.
I would just encourage fans to, you know, I'm not saying don't chirp the players. That's all well and good, but don't, you know, encourage self-harm or stuff like that. Let them know that you want them to be injured. Stuff like that is a little crazy to me. Don't think you should say that. You'll hear it, Gordo. And when Bayo talks in the documentary, he talks about the things that have been yelled at him. I felt bad to hear as a Red Sox fan myself. So we'll be better. We'll all be better. Let's all be better together, Red Sox fans. These are humans, not superheroes.
Yep. Very excited to watch this doc, though. I think I'm hopefully gonna, I mean, when I start, I'm hopefully gonna, you know, maybe three or four sittings get through the whole thing, because I just don't want to stop. But I am excited.
We'll do a recap too. If you want to hear like the documentary talk, we all four of us, I don't think any of us have finished it yet, because, you know, work and being at Fenway, a lot of stuff to do. But we'll get to it and we'll do a review.
There's nothing we love talking more than docking.
All right.
Wow. All right.
That's going to do it for episode 197 of Play Tessie. I guess one last thing before we get out of here. Shout out to our guy, Robert Stock, for making it back to the majors. Hadn't been in the majors since 2021. Made his appearance in the Richard Fitz start, which was the first game of the series. Two scoreless innings. Got DFA'd and then outrighted to AAA when he cleared waivers. So shout out to him for making it back. Such an awesome story. If you haven't heard his story, listen to him on both our show. We interviewed him over the winter, and he did an interview on Baseballs and Boring over the winter too, where he gets into his story. It's super cool story. Learn about the guy. Hopefully he gets back up here at some point. But it's good that he's staying in the organization, staying close by. But that's going to do it for episode 197 of Play Tessie. Remember, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Rate 5 stars. That helps us out so much. So just make sure you do those things to support your boys. And find us on YouTube on the WEI channel. Got the Play Tessie playlist, has all of our episodes in video form. So click the thumbs up on those videos, subscribe to WEI on YouTube, and then follow us on all the socials, Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok. Go through that TikTok feed. It's good shit on there. I'm serious.
Love,
like,
it.
We just started it, but, like, I like that, because, like, the Instagram gets kind of, you know, boggled with you know, our episode posts and stuff, but the TikTok is just the videos, so it's really good stuff. So go check us out on TikTok. But for Sammy, for Pat, For Bo Bichette's favorite producer, Joe Braverman, it's Gordo here for Play Tessie, episode 197. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.